Okay, thank you very much. I have the nice task of waking everybody up after this nice lunch. And the other thing, I guess I represent here the transition from observations into theory, and I'll do that in a way which indeed I hope sort of shows this transition. When I got assigned this topic, I started thinking what would be the best way to introduce this to this quite diverse audience. Half of the people know this just as good as I do, or at least they themselves believe they do much better than I do, and the other half probably doesn't know very much about it. So since it's a topic where I think a number of people could talk about this easily for lengthy periods of time, I will try to give a little bit of the essence of some of the problems we have, some of the ways I hope, at least from the observational side, that we can learn something here, and I will say very little about the theoretical aspects of how you might go about this problem. So let me start by introducing what Common Envelope is. And it all started basically in the 1970s when binaries were discovered where, and I'll explain later how this works, it's clear that the current separation between the two stars is smaller, significantly smaller, than the size of at least one of the two stars somewhere in the past. So this is funny. And basically, I think the best way to summarize this is a lot of angular momentum in the system must have been lost. This was realized in the 70s, both for low-mass stars, in particular cataclysmic variables, but also for massive stars, and it led in 1976, both Baczynski and also Jerry Ostreicher to propose that in some way, basically, you could get a phase of mass transfer, where there's mass transfer from a big giant onto a companion star in such a way that the companion star ends up inside the envelope of the giant. And this therefore is why it's called common envelope. I mean, so the envelope of the giant is then becomes a common envelope to both the core of the giant and the companion star. And this gave a nice picture that is this moving companion star would basically move through the envelope of the companion and by friction get slowed down, and in this way it would lose orbital energy. And the idea was maybe this orbital energy is used to unbind the envelope of the giant. And the consequence of this would be that you lose the envelope and at the same time you lose a lot of the the orbital energy of the binary, and as well, of course, if you want to make the binary smaller, a lot of angular momentum, and in that way you would lose the mantle of the giant and you would end up with a short period binary. So this is all we wanted by then. There are a number of ways how basically the outcome of this has been estimated, and basically they come down to this, what I said in words just now. If we assume that the change of the orbital energy is used to unbind the envelope of the giant with some efficiency, you can write down this equation where the binding energy of the giant envelope is provided by the orbital energy with some efficiency alpha, which naively, of course, you would expect to be smaller than 1. You can write out how that works if you assume a before situation where you have a giant with a binding envelope written down like this, with the parameter lambda basically containing all the information about the structure of the giant, and here the change in orbital energy. This is the way Ron Webbing wrote it down in 84. There has been another equation in the literature which basically says, well, you know, this first phase might happen very quickly or something like that, and you really have to unbind the envelope from the potential well of both the objects in the system, but also they actually estimated that the binding energy here would be given roughly by the size before the common envelope starts, and it turns out that this big factor here makes that you get, you need a little bit less orbital energy to unbind your system with this particular parameterization. Well, that's not really very important here, but. So, why do we bother about this? Well, the first and most important reason, I think, is because it's extremely common. In a slide that I saw of Lev Jungelsen's talk 2 weeks ago, he writes that about 90% of low and intermediate mass closed binaries go through a phase where you would expect from the dynamics of the mass transfer and the stability of the mass transfer for them to enter such a phase. In massive stars, it's a little bit more complicated, but also there are many paths of evolution where you expect this to happen. The other thing, which is sort of from the observational point of view maybe, there are many compact binaries that we observe that in order to understand these binaries, we have to include this phase in somewhere in the evolution. And last but not least, many spectacular phenomena that we observe in the universe in some way are related. And, well, not in the least, especially in this setting here, type 1a supernovae. And I noticed that this is an extremely popular image that I'm sure we'll see many more times this week. So the question is, okay, this is all very nice and very important, but what can we learn from the observations? So this is basically almost all I want to say about the theory side, which is not very theoretic, writing down simple balance equations, but there is more to say about that, but I don't have the time. I really want to go into what we can learn from the observations. And basically, it already, my introduction told you that it was really the observations of such of a number of binaries that led to the notion that this must happen in the first place. So there must be a way in which we can learn about this phase from observations. And basically, if I now, for the rest of my talk, I restrict myself to white dwarf binaries because there it works best. If you look at a white dwarf binary, you know that the white dwarf was at some point in the past the core of a giant. And we are lucky that these giants have a core mass radius relation. So basically the size of the giant is set by the mass of its core, not by its total mass or anything. And that's shown here, core mass versus radius for a number of, this is for low mass stars with degenerate cores. So there are complications here. But anyway, you see that they roughly line up to a unique relation between core mass and radius. And this is not so strange because basically the core sets the temperature of the burning shell around the core. So the temperature of the burning shell sets the luminosity of the giant. And since these giants are all squashed into the Hayashi track where they have roughly equal effective temperatures, a core mass luminosity relation is of course also a core mass radius relation. So this is very nice, because what we can do here is we can use these binaries to reconstruct this phase of mass transfer that has led to the evolution of this binary. And the way it works is like this. Here we see a binary of two objects. The black one here is a white dwarf. The other one is either another white dwarf or a companion star. And by applying this core mass radius relation, we know that the progenitor of that white dwarf was a giant this big. And obviously, in a previous phase, the companion star had to be outside that giant, and we believe that in most cases, actually, the common envelope was started by the giant overfilling its Virchow. So that means that for a given white dwarf, you can work out what the orbital, what the binary must have looked like before the mass transfer. The only complicating factor is that because there is a core mass radius relation which doesn't depend on the mass of the giant, the mass of this object here is still unknown. And there are a number of classes of objects where we can apply this to. The first are these pre-ZVs or a white dwarf with a main sequence companion. And I just included this picture because it's such a beautiful picture where you see the white dwarf absorption line slightly changing here as a function of the orbit and the emission line of the companion star going around this. We already heard a little bit about this. This is a white dwarf with a brown dwarf companion. Boris said a little bit more about this. And the second type of object where we can use this are double white dwarfs. And if we're lucky, if we can see both white dwarfs, like here in this object where you observe both of the white dwarfs, and you can see from this radial velocity curve that they have equal mass. In principle, you can do this trick twice. So you can say the hottest white dwarf was formed the latest, so you can reconstruct what the binary looked like before this white dwarf was formed, and you know that the other guy was a white dwarf, so that was a giant somewhere in the past as well, and you can reconstruct the evolution maybe twice even. So this is very nice, and I'll show some results that I did together with Chris Stout 2 years ago by now, where we looked at 19 double white dwarfs that are 25 known by now and 30 post common envelope binaries, and we heard there are about 40 by now, and in no time there will be 1500, so we'll be extremely lucky. And basically the procedure that we used is, if you remember this equation, I now just move this lambda factor here over to the right. You could improve on this, because this lambda factor you could determine in principle from your stellar evolution models, but we choose to do it this way. So basically, you observe a binary where you see the core mass of the giant, which is the white dwarf, the companion mass, and you see the current orbital period, which basically is the separation after the common envelope. And then you can basically run through a number of models where you say potential progenitors, determine their mass and their radius, and therefore you know all the variables in this equation except for this alpha lambda factor here, which can tell you how much basically what kind of common envelope could have produced these objects. So this is a plot. I'll show a few of these. These are the names of the objects, so it's not really very important here if we don't want to go into the details. And here on the x-axis is this alpha lambda combination, and you can see on the left side, these are double white dwarfs, and we're talking now about the last phase of mass transfer. So you have a white dwarf and a giant, you get a common envelope, you end up with two white dwarfs in a closed binary. And on the right side, this is the pre-ZV, so you have a white dwarf with a giant with a main sequence companion, and you get to a very closed binary afterwards. And basically, a summary here, I would say, is that these alpha lambda values are sort of consistent with being between 0 and 1 or something like that. You would expect that this lambda parameter is, generally not very much bigger than 1. So that basically the conclusion here is this particular formalism describes these systems reasonably well. On the right hand side, you see that it's the conclusion is sort of similar, but actually the reconstructed values are quite different. I'll come back to the top here, where there are a few systems that maybe look not such convincing. So I would say that for these two classes of objects, it looks like the simple prescription we have for the common envelope does a reasonably okay job, or otherwise our observations do not tell us very much about it. The first complication arises when you apply the same mechanism to the very first phase, where you formed the first formed white dwarf. If you just apply the procedure I told you before, you find that you get all these negative values of alpha times lambda. And basically, what this tells you is that for many of the observed systems where we see two white dwarfs in the very first phase of mass transfer, the orbital energy after the so-called common envelope is larger than before. So basically you have to put in energy into the orbit instead of getting it out to unbind the binary. So this tells you there's something wrong. Before we can conclude that this means that we don't understand common envelopes or that we don't understand anything about binary evolution, we have to be careful, because there are a number of complications. The first and most important, of course, is, are we sure we are observing objects that actually went through a common envelope? Isn't there another binary evolution scenario that you can think of that might have produced these? And in particular, if you have stable mass transfer, so here in this common envelope, we're always talking about very unstable mass transfer where things happen on a short time scale. We know there are many binaries where there is stable mass transfer from one object to the other, and actually by the nature of these stable mass transfers, the luminosity of your star basically pushes stuff out to the radius of the star that then falls onto the companion star. So this is a very natural way to pump energy into an orbit. The common belief, so to say, is that this type of mass transfer will only be stable if the donor star has a radiative envelope. So the type of giants I talked about before that have a convective envelope, there this shouldn't work. That's at least the theory. The other important question, of course, you have to ask is, do we have all the terms in this energy balance equation? The second complication is, I'm very lucky that Boris showed this, so I quickly grabbed this this figure again of Willems and Kolb, predicting basically that you would have two classes of binaries, one with short orbital periods, this is 100 days, and one with very long orbital periods that didn't do any mass transfer at all. And if you look at a number of white binaries, and you'll hear more about symbiotic binaries later, but there's actually a whole class of binaries where it's not always clear that one of the two stars is a white dwarf, so you have to be careful here a little bit. But if you can see on the right hand side, these are post-AGB binaries, so this is clearly something where which you should be able to compare to the previous slide, and you see that there's definitely no gap here. So this also, I think, points to that our simple picture of either having a confident envelope, moving stuff to short periods, or having stable mass transfer, or avoiding mass transfer and having the systems move to wider system, simply doesn't really work. So let me then at last come to this maybe was a little bit brief overview of what the problem is, to interpretations of these findings. And I think, I'm not sure this is complete, but I have listed down four solutions, so to say. In particular, I think these have been suggested for this funny situation that the first phase of mass transfer of these double white dwarfs apparently didn't lead to loss of orbital energy, but actually might have, the orbital energy might have increased. The first is that they were formed via stable mass transfer, and Ron Rebink has recently done some calculations where he suggests that this might really be the solution, especially if you include some stellar wind in either during or mass loss during the mass for this stable mass transfer phase or after that. A second option could be that indeed you, in some way, you provide additional energy, and most people then come up with, actually, if you look at the envelopes of these giants, there in principle is a lot of recombination energy available. If you could get that, this might help you. A recent paper by Beer et al. Suggested that you might have super Eddington mass transfer. So basically you dump in this giant, instead of getting into a common envelope, you dump a lot of material onto the companion star that loses all the excess material to infinity. And this, if you work out the binary evolution, actually leads to quite similar types of evolution than what we reconstructed. The chairman is forgetting the time, so luckily I am sort of roughly on the schedule.
Interesting, I'm sorry.
I've been looking at that clock, so it's good. So actually, I think I'm pretty well on the schedule. And the last thing, which is something we proposed, which is a very, how do you say, exploratory way, and saying, well, if we look instead of energy balance to angular momentum balance, we happen to find something that looked pretty much like the observed systems. However, all these solutions, I think, have problems, or even serious problems. And so I'll spend the last few minutes on explaining why I think there are still many problems around and what these problems are. So the first is this stable mass transfer, and I put my initials here because I think that there are not enough, that basically if you look at the potential binary systems where you can imagine that they would go through stable mass transfer, the initial parameter space is simply not enough to explain the fact that we see so many double white dwarfs and we see so many, basically we see so many white dwarfs in binaries. One thing to note, actually, is that the system Ralph talked about, the WD2020, I think is a perfect example of a system which looks very much like the type of binary you would expect if stable mass transfer would happen. So this is not to say that it doesn't happen, but I don't think this will be the answer to the solution. This recombination energy is of course very interesting, but it seems that basically this would most likely or most naturally be something that happens only if the very, very evolved giants, where basically the binding energy of the giant becomes quite small already. So there again, I'm not sure how well this will solve our problem. And then there's this Super Eddington mass transfer paper, and just to say what they did, maybe very briefly, so we suggested this very simple equation and said this explains all the observed binaries well, and as you can see here, the problem here is that we don't really understand what the physics is, why the binaries should actually obey this relation. These people here that worked out the Super Eddington mass transfer rate, they compared their results to this parameter gamma that we introduced there. But you have to be, I have to warn everybody, you have to be extremely careful, because at this parameter gamma at some point becomes extremely sensitive to basically your binary parameters. So the fact that you get solutions, that you get binary evolution that produces a gamma that is roughly consistent with the gamma that you find if you infer it from the binaries. Are you still with me here? You have to be careful, because if this gamma is near that, that doesn't mean that actually the outcome of the binary evolution scenario that you proposed is anywhere near the observed binary. So you shouldn't do this gamma stuff in between. You should go directly from the observed binaries to your model. And the problem here is, it seems to me that they always get very wide binaries, while we observe some objects that have very short periods, the double white dwarfs. The other thing is that we know that if you dump a lot of material onto a star, it tends to expand, and they have some funny way of getting all the stuff they throw into the potential well out again. I'll skip this. Ron, you can ask me if you want to see it. And I'll stop here with the conclusions. So I convinced you that because of this, basically this core mass radius relation, white dwarf binaries are extremely useful to basically reconstruct the binary evolution. And this in principle, of course, tells us a lot about common envelopes. This is very good, because the theoretical problem, and I didn't say much about it, is very hard. So that's a difficult way, although people are working on that, which is very good. The conclusions from the observations, it seems that systems with a giant and a low mass companion, either M star or a white dwarf, end up with very short periods, while giants with a comparable mass companion seem to end up with relatively wide binaries. So one of the things which I very much hope is that we can start looking at objects where you basically see a white dwarf with a not so low mass main sequence companion. Thank you.
Yes, I think I agree with most of what you said, except
that
I was surprised that
That's
you said that the parameter space for stable mass transfer is so small, because the actual binary calculation suggests that the critical mass ratio is about 1.2. And even that's just straight calculations without assuming tightly enhanced mass loss, which could push this value significantly.
For the radiative stars, right?
No, for convective stars.
Okay.
That's what the actual binary calculation show.
Okay.
Not 0.7, it's about 1.2.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure all binary calculations show that, but I think this is definitely a way to check. But
I think so. I think they all show that. But. No, I have another question. But I think there's plenty of evidence that there's a third mode of mass transfer, where you have some sort of common envelope, but not much spiral in, which is very similar to what you call this angular momentum driven mass transfer. I'm not sure whether it's your prescription is quite right, but I think the symbiotics are a particularly good example that there's something else going on in these systems.
Yes, I fully agree.
So I actually have two questions. So first is for a common envelope system involving two white dwarfs, do you have any estimates for example the total mass of the system?
of the system of the envelope, you mean, or?
Yeah, the whole system, the two white dwarfs together. You know, the total mass, is it bigger, for example, than the Chandrasekhar mass?
Oh, no. The most systems I showed here are, so these are basically the type of binaries that Ralph was talking about. So there's no new information here compared to the graph that Ralph showed. So these are the basically most of them are the low mass, helium, double helium white dwarf.
Okay, so I guess that also answered my second question. Basically, I'm wondering, you know, for white dwarf in a common envelope phase, how much mass it would gain in during the common envelope phase, and whether that were actually reach Chandrasekhar mass and become a 1A explosion. I guess the answer is not, right?
Yes. Well, that's a little bit hard to answer before we know what actually happens, but it seems that most likely, at least the last phase takes quite short time, so it's pretty difficult to imagine that substantial amounts of mass will be accreted. I tried to say this in the most politically correct way I could, but I think that's the general belief that this for basically masses, well, enhancing masses is probably not going to be very important.
Okay. Lunch.
Ron is willing to ask the question.
It's too long. We'll take it out of your talk time. Go ahead.
Won't hurt me. Now I forgot my question. No, my remark.
I'll put this up.
Oh, well, I didn't see that the first time. But in any case, just to make the point, if the first phase of mass transfer producing these double white dwarfs were a slow, stable phase, it's fair to say that one still has to come up with some mechanism that loses an awful lot of angular moment, a lot of mass, either in a terminal phase, a terminal part of the first phase of mass transfer, or between the first and second phase, and that poses some conundrum in its own right.
Right. I mean, I have heard, so this is maybe a challenge to Philip, then I have heard many people saying to me that stable mass transfer could do this, and I would like to see a calculation showing this in detail. Yes. But I mean, the point as this is maybe going a little bit too deep. We discussed this, Hassan van Han did a study where he included that, and his results clearly do not agree with the binaries that we observe. So you have to do something where he had half of the mass, half of the transferred mass, I must say, be lost in a stable. So I think the answer is a little bit more complicated. Oh, yeah, but I mean, everybody keeps telling me this is possible, but show me, right? Okay, good. Yeah, okay, then I'll say something about this plot. So this is basically an answer to the question Ron asked to Ralph. So this is a plot of the mass ratio. So forget the gray shade, which is a model based on this gamma stuff, but look at the data. So you see a number of objects here. These are the double-lined binaries. And they, as Ron said, basically cluster around equal mass. And indeed, if you do the mean, you get roughly equal mass. The other guys here are the single line systems where you, from the mass function, you basically have an upper limit to the mass ratio. So plotted in these arrows is here the minimum, the maximum mass ratio, so the minimum companion star mass. The big dot is sort of the most probable inclination mass, and the end is, I think, 95% probability. Of course, these arrows basically go up to zero, right? Because your mass can be infinite. So you see here, I think, and we said that in the paper, that from these upper limits here, it seems that a bit of these are away from one. So I think that's, from the observational point of view, the fair statement.